Around the NFL Podcast. We'll only answer to Mr. Big Chest.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined in a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Free agency week is here. It's here, boys. And you know how I know it's an important week?
Because Mark's got a sport coat on.
You nailed it. Got a text message at 8:42, group text message, labeled under ATN boys. That's the subhead for the group.
Boys with a Z.
With a Z. 8:42 from Mark Sessler, wearing a sports coat today. That's how you know this is a big week.
A lot of times I try to get certain amounts of laundry done during the weekend, and I'm not saying it's only for that reason, but I'm at the point where like all I had left were shirts I hadn't really worn since like 2014, so I thought I'm gonna go up the ladder.
Now let's be honest though. There's a little bit of ambition bleeding out of the pores here, sweating out of the pores. You want to kill it this week. You know the eyes of the world, football of the world, inside this building. What are the ATN guys going to say? Oh, we have NFL.com shows, video shows going up. We got our Twitter show coming up. We got four pods coming up this week. It's your time to shine. It's Mark's time.
Well, I mean, none of that is so entirely wrong that I have no problem showing up in a sports coat this specific week, but the idea that you would put it as personal ambition is misdiagnosed.
Wes brought up big velvet, so yes, this is a big week.
We're in a place where we're competing with Wes's wardrobe at this point, too. I mean,
where
he was 2 years ago, 3 years ago with his clothing, he'd be wearing, like, an NFL Network, one of those, like, summery little short sleeve shirts that they give you
something
like
out at the NFL shop. That was an old Wes move, and Wes likes to say it has nothing to do with the Paramore coming.
That's not what I say.
Everything changed.
My style definitely changed. She brought it out of me, but a lot of what I pick out and wear gets credited to her.
And you're wearing velvet today. Who would have thought?
Which I bought.
I view it kind of like
what velvet.
You're a defensive minded head coach that hired a great offensive coordinator. You're not really happy that he's getting, or she in this case, is getting all the pop for scoring so many points.
In no way, shape, or form am I a defensive-minded head coach. I am all offense, baby.
All right. Well, so, yes.
It's a busy week. Should we just start this show with some breaking news?
Let's do it. It better not be about Paul Reiser or anything. Is it a real breaking news?
Sources, according to Ian Rappaport, former Giants star Landon Collins is signing with the Washington Redskins for $84 million over six seasons.
Interesting.
As we start the show, that literally drops on
Twitter. So the Giants made the decision that they could not, at least what it seemed from the outside, they couldn't decide if Landon Collins was worth star money. But Wes, the Redskins, the Washington Football Organization, they have no qualms. They have zero qualms.
Played against him twice a year every year and saw how much of a difference maker he is, saw how much of a playmaker he is, and they seem to be really reshaping their defense. Word around the campfire is they're in on C.J. Mosley, too, and are willing to trade Mason Foster and Zach Brown, their inside linebackers. So this could be a totally different defense next year.
I essentially do not trust the Redskins front office to do much of anything right. I mean, that just seems to be an ongoing theme for them. But who isn't under intense pressure to produce immediately this season? And their defense has been an issue for a long time.
Well, that includes their defensive coordinator, who they kept, Greg Minuski, even though they literally interviewed people for his job and then didn't hire them. And this is a team, we've talked about it here, that's desperate. And I think people have looked at the Alex Smith contract and thought, okay, well, this team, you know, isn't going to be able to spend. But they have some cap space, and I think they're approaching the Alex Smith situation, especially after getting Case Keenum, the only way they can, which is just it's a sunk cost, and you just have to ignore that it happens. I mean, Pittsburgh is paying as much for Antonio Brown on the cap as Washington is paying for Alex Smith, and they're still going to try to do business, and this is aggressive. I want to see the guaranteed money, but it certainly is good news, I think, for all the safeties out there trying to make some money this year, because no matter what it is in the first 2 or 3 years in the guaranteed money, it's going to be a lot, and he's going to be the highest paid.
Rap Sheet has $45 million guaranteed and paid out over the first 3 years.
There you go.
All right, a lot of big names on the move. Another one is Nick Foles. It's been speculated for weeks and weeks that he would end up with the Jacksonville Jaguars, and that's exactly where Nick Foles ended up. He signs a deal, a saucy deal, Mark Sessler, with the Jaguars. It goes 4 years for $88 million, includes $50 million in guaranteed money. And Mark, we'll start with you on this one. So Foles, despite the fact that there weren't a lot of teams that were connected to him, maybe just one team, and it was the Jacksonville Jaguars, he still gets big time starter money or competitive starter money.
Yeah, I think when the numbers came out, there was a lot of like, wait, of course you're this, you know, been talked about, you're a team competing against no one. Why wouldn't you try to bargain basement the quarterback position? And Mike Garafolo said it perfectly on NFL Network that their viewpoint was, what are you telling the rest of your locker room if you bring in Nick Foles at a discount rate? You want to make it clear that he's your starter for now. He's your starting quarterback. You pay him like one. You start that relationship off well versus something sort of more in the cantankerous region. And I, for me, like the this is like about what other quarterback were you going to go get that you could be secure in as a week-to-week starter? There just weren't that many out there unless you want to go in the draft. And I don't think that this regime has enough time on their hands to convince a Jaguars public that we're gonna slow cook a quarterback for 2 or 3 years. This is about Nick Foles the person too. This is a guy who I think his leadership and what we hear about Nick Foles has been growing and positive, and he's a bit of a transformed person along with player.
I think he had plenty of leverage. Blake Bortles and Teddy Bridgewater were his leverage. And John DeFilippo, the offensive coordinator they brought in, who has worked with Nick Foles in the past, this is his leverage. You don't want to go back to Bortles. You don't want to pay for Bridgewater, who you weren't interested in last year, has one start in 3 years and was outplayed by an undrafted rookie in that start. Go get the best quarterback available. That's Nick Foles' leverage.
Right, and you don't know what a ceiling is. I like it because I think they should keep taking shots. They should try to develop a quarterback. They probably won't because teams never do this. But they should still draft a quarterback, maybe even in the first round. I don't care. Oh, what's the big problem that you're running into? You have too many great quarterbacks? It's like, wow.
Well, they have needs. Right. They have a lot of needs.
I know they do. And it's probably not going to happen in the first round. But I don't think you close your mind to developing quarterbacks because you signed Nick Foles. I also want to see the specifics on the deal, how much is guaranteed into the second year. My guess is it's basically a 2-year contract, and then they'll see what he looks like. But, like, he could get better. I mean, quarterbacks do get better throughout their career, and he has been not just visibly better and with a ceiling of the greatest performance, I think, in Super Bowl history by a quarterback, but he's talked about how he looks at the sport differently and how he looks at the position differently in terms of how he interacts with his teammates and everything like that. You're getting a different Nick Foles than the guy that went to Kansas City so many years ago.
$50 million guaranteed or whatever it ends up being is a big investment. It could end up being an overpay, but I agree with everything you guys are saying, that this is a team that made its bed when they gave Blake Bortles that unnecessary extension. They ate it this year, and they needed to move forward at the position. They needed to make a splash, and Foles is, to me, an efficient, effective splash to make. And now we'll find out with the Jaguars,
right,
if that defense can now turn back to 2017 status, because it wasn't all Bortles last year. There were other problems with this team. They need to have a much better year in 2019.
That's fair. The offensive line was so banged up and so awful last year. They need
wide receiver core was awful.
Better
the
luck,
running backs
better,
were awful.
Like there was a lot going on. But to me, it's not Nick Foles or any of these mid-level starting quarterbacks like Cousins that's overpaid. Overpaid. It's just like Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, and those guys are like crazy underpaid. It does sort of make no sense that all quarterbacks just make the same amount of money.
All right. Good chatter. Liked it. We're going to keep moving, though. There's so much to talk about. Very exciting. How about DeSean Jackson? Let's throw his name out there. 2 years in Tampa, didn't really take off, didn't work. He had some moments early on in 2018, especially when Fitzmagic took hold for a few weeks there, but it didn't work out with the Bucs. We thought maybe he could be released. Instead, a trade. He's going back to the Eagles, a 2020 seventh-round pick, and Jackson from the Bucs in exchange for a 2019 sixth-round pick. The Eagles also sign DeSean Jackson to a new 3-year, $27 million deal. So Jackson, who's been around a while, he's 32 years old, will turn 33 during the 2019 season. But, Wes, we saw last year that he could still tear the top off a defense, and the Eagles want that element in their offense.
We have to worry about a player who's going to be 33 years old and his game is built on speed and nothing else, just speed. And he's taught us something about quarterbacks in Tampa, that he was on fire last year with Ryan Fitzpatrick who has a weak arm but throws a pretty deep ball. And now he's going to Philadelphia, where Nick Foles doesn't have the strongest arm in the world but throws a pretty deep ball. Carson Wentz has a strong arm and doesn't put enough loft on the ball. So I'm wondering how that connection will work. It's definitely filling a need. Mike Wallace didn't work out in Philadelphia. They need that speed guy to stretch the field.
It can't work out worse than Mike Wallace, but they do keep getting older, aging deep threats. And it just, at some point, if this doesn't work out again, you've got to look at a younger person for that fit. But what I love about this is it just shows you that these NFL feuds die so hard. This felt to me like one final Howie Roseman FU to Chip Kelly.
He's had a few. I mean, I'm curious if they're going to keep Nelson Aguilar, who's due $9.5 million. I have a feeling they might cut or trade him later in this week. He's not really a deep threat anyways. And I hear you long-term, Wes, on DeSean Jackson, but for 2019, I think that's really all they're thinking about in the short term. He led the league in yards per reception. I mean, so he's
19 yards per catch.
He's built on speed, and he still totally has it, at least in 2018. It's not going to last forever, but he has shown no signs of really dropping off.
Carson Wentz had a lost year in 2018. You want to give him a good team around him to really try to bounce back. He is your guy. After all, you chose him over Nick Foles. Well, now you have a guy to add. You got Zach Ertz there, Alshon Jeffrey. Not a bad offense. Nelson Aguilar, maybe.
Need a running back.
They look a lot more loaded in the passing game than they did last year.
Let's talk about an old face, Mark. Antonio Brown, who we're going to get to in a minute. He left the AFC North. He is now out west. Also joining him in the Pacific time zone, Terrell Suggs. He leaves the Ravens after 16 years in Baltimore, and he's going to he has agreed to terms with the Cardinals. He will be an outside linebacker. He's working under Vance Joseph, a 3-4 system. He still seems to have it. He's an old man now, maybe slowed a little bit, but still can get to the rusher, still a beast. Your thoughts on that move, Mark?
Someone to pair with Chandler Jones. It's one of those signings, though, where looking at him in a different uniform, I think the weirdest one for me ever was Peyton Manning suddenly in a Broncos uniform. It took me months to warm up to. That's not anyone else's concern. That's my issue.
Have you recovered?
Yeah,
By
the end of the preseason, it was like, okay, I get it. But this guy is going to be weird to see in anything other than purple and white. And I find him to be, from a personal experience of him on the field after the Ravens won the Super Bowl, a less than delightful character, but I wish him well.
Do you, though?
Huh?
Do you, though?
I mean,
would you be totally cool? And you could say yes, by the way, because Terrell Suggs, God knows, not the best person. You'd be fine if he didn't have a single sack in Arizona. Nobody would fault you for it.
I'm not going to spend a lot of time with that as my major concern, but he's had a fine career at this point.
And he was still playing at a high level last year. He was solid. I mean,
he was.
He's one of those signings, and look, he went to high school in Arizona. He went to Arizona State, so that's great for him. It's nice and warm. But there's always these guys every year that it's like, well, we're gonna sign him to kind of be an example to the young guys and bring kind of the work hard like culture, and like, so we're gonna give him a little extra money to kind of be the guy who sets the program. And it's like, I don't know. I've never been on NFL. Maybe that is totally worth it. I have no idea if that's worth it or not. But there's always a couple of those. It's like, well, we gotta bring in Suggs to show all the
young guys. I'm not sure he's the first guy I'd put into the mentor category, but
well, put it this way. He knows how to play in the NFL. He knows how to be a professional player at a high level year after year after year. Like, he's done it for, what, 18 years? He was like 20 years old when he came in.
He's going to enroll a lot of these young men in Ball So Hard University, and they will excel, please. Mark. Not just
I want to see the, I want to see the teaching credential, but
not just
enough.
Football lessons, life lessons.
Ball So Hard?
At BSU.
Well, good riddance.
Wait, Ball BSHU. Ball So Hard University. Nailed it. Moving on, we have some slot receivers coming off the market. Let's start with Adam Humphries, who signs or will sign. I got to catch myself there. The league year does not start until Wednesday.
Be official.
Adam Humphries to sign with the Tennessee Titans, the former Bucks slot guy, gets a 4-year, $36 million deal. Wes, you like yourself some Adam Humphries, and the Titans, they need some weapons around that quarterback who throws about 12 touchdowns a year. How about a guy you can trust in the slot?
That's a nice shot at Mariota. I like that. This is a little bittersweet for me because
what?
Adam Humphries is one of my guys. Like, he is what you want in a slot.
He's like in your wedding party at this point.
Right. I mean, doesn't this already clinch the team of WestEL? It's the Titans again.
I wanted Don't him for it. The Colts. I wanted Andrew Luck to be throwing to Adam Humphries because they could really enhance each other, and I just don't have that faith in Marcus Mariota anymore. It's definitely a need for the Titans. They've needed a slot receiver for a few years now, and they got a good one. This is what you want in a slot receiver.
Do you just kind of worry that he could disappear in all of
this?
Yes. Yeah.
Titans wide receivers always disappear.
Are you so you're sticking with the Colts for longer than you stuck with the Titans?
No, this is about wanting to see a player going to where he will succeed and do his best and help the quarterback succeed and do his best. And the Colts, I felt really confident that they could really make each other as good as they could possibly be.
Colts have $100 million in cap room. Now, they don't have to spend all of that, but to Wes's point, this seems like one of those useful players that could have had 110 catches with Andrew Luck. Instead, he's going to have 54 catches with the Titans in 2000.
For 112 yards.
Slot guy's getting paid, though. I mean, Jamison Crowder.
Jamison Crowder, he signs with the Jets, the former Redskin, signs a three-year, $28.5 million contract with $17 million guaranteed. So kind of in that same group. Crowder, I like this signing so far. I like what Big Mac's doing right now, last few days. He's 26 years old. Bad year last year, but he was beat up, so you kind of wipe it out. Alex Smith, it wasn't working. The whole thing was a mess in Washington. So you take a slot receiver, you pair him with the kid and Sam Darnold, the guy you can trust and maybe develop a rapport with, and we are flying towards 10-6.
And you aren't paying that Antonio Brown money. I kind of think the Jets have something going at wide receiver. They might need another. They could use another body or two, but this is not the worst wide receiver room in that division.
And both Crowder and Humphries, the original reports, you know, on their salaries is under $10 million a year. And I actually think slot receivers, you know, it's catching up, but compared to other free agent positions, I think they're worth it. I mean, I don't think $9 million is outrageous for Jamison Crowder at all. I think it's $17 million over the next 2 years. I really like him. He was my favorite of kind of this crop of slot receivers. I think he's going to make life easier for Sam Darnold. Like, Kirk Cousins won't stop talking about Jamison Crowder. Just like what a nice mind meld they have, and just the type of guy that can get open quickly, make everything a little easier. And so to me, this is a great move.
Like, we've moved into a time where you need four wide receivers. You need five or six defensive backs. And so to your point, they're going to get paid that way.
A little return value, you know.
Crowd. I think a lot of
– nice name.
A lot of teams with developing quarterbacks looked at what happened with Jared Goff once Cooper Kupp went down. His safety blanket there at slot receiver. And now, you know, if you're Sam Darnold, that's a great thing to have, Jamison Crowder there.
Crowder, Robbie Anderson, Quincy Enunwa, and Chris Herndon at tight end. Add Lev Bell in there and continue to improve the line. We're cooking a little bit. Let's see how it plays out.
I like how they've started.
Kent Brown behind the glass today, filling in for Erica, who took a hilariously mistimed vacation. I mean, let's keep it honest. The fact that we like Erica so much, Ricky Hollywood, really shields the fact that in our past, other producers, we'd probably be furious about this, that she's going across Europe having a great time.
What I admire,
though, let her off the hook.
She's digging in on the fact that she could care less about the free agency or most off-season, off-calendar NFL events. She openly just asked what free agency was last week.
She does it with panache. You're right, though. It does fit into the – like, it's not surprising that she didn't know which week free agency was and make her vacation
plans around it. She's like the only daughter, daddy's little girl, who gets away with murder. That's what's going on with the situation right now as she goes across Europe. Kent Brown filling in behind the glass. Kent, thank you, first of all, for being here.
Yeah, of course. It's a lot of fun. I'm happy to fill in free agency frenzy and talk a little Antonio Brown leaving the Steelers.
Kent's more like the son that gets blamed for everything, even if it's not his fault.
Oh, yeah, because I'm the middle child, and I had an identical twin that was 8 minutes younger than me,
right,
and he might as well have been 20 years younger than me.
But, well, listen, we love you, Kent, and thank you for being here.
Of course.
Be ready.
There's
with
two
that,
of you.
With that breaking news drop. Oh, yeah. Because as the show goes along, things can happen. Because, yes, while free agency starts officially at Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern, I believe it is.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, who cares what that time is?
That's when the deal, that's the new league year when it begins. But free agency, for all intents and purposes, is happening right now, as you just saw.
I was reminded of that, by the way, at the combine. Just a quick point that the Broncos and the Ravens were afraid to talk about the Joe Flacco trade because actually trades aren't even allowed to happen until Wednesday. that's such a under the radar thing. I applaud the NFL for not caring about it, but just change the rules.
Well, aren't we? We're probably a year away from all of these bizarre soft rules just vanishing.
You know what? I'm not hearing
a start time on
no
NFL
one complains
network.
About it anymore.
I haven't heard, and I was a little out of pocket this past week with the fam. But what I haven't heard a lot of from today, watching NFL Network and on Twitter and all that, I haven't heard a lot of legal tampering, period. No. I think we're as a society, and the NFL to the Shield's credit, is like, let's just keep it real here. The free agency is on right now.
It just is like if you woke up on Christmas morning, if you celebrate Christmas, and your kids had been up all night opening all the gifts before this so-called official start time when mom and dad wake up. Forget about it. Open them up, start playing with them.
So a bunch of stuff has happened over the weekend and today, and we're going to talk about it, but we have to hit
Antonio
Brown.
Throw your children out the window?
No, the toys. Sorry. Just open the door on December. I don't like this one.
Sorry, Dan.
Sorry,
okay.
Dan.
Antonio Brown, we got to talk about it because it went down over the weekend, finally. And it was the team that we were told early last week about the one-horse race. The Oakland Raiders were going to get Antonio Brown, and then, of course, the Bills report that turned out to be not come through, and Antonio Brown was not going to the Buffalo Bills. Well, he goes to the Oakland Raiders, and it comes on a great bargain for John Gruden and Mike Mayock and company, one of the best receivers in the league, goes to Oakland in exchange for a third-round pick and a fifth-round pick in next month's draft, and Brown then turns around and gets that contract that he wanted. The man is getting everything he wanted. He gets a three-year deal worth $50.1 million, maxes out just under 55, roughly $12 million more than his old contract, $30 million guaranteed. Greg, you wrote about this on the .com, and your lead. Nice way to get into the piece. I enjoy it as a reader of sports content. It worked.
I mean, it did. Everything Antonio Brown did, whether you like it or not, and who would really, just enjoy everything that's gone on since December. Ultimately, he believed he had the leverage to get out of Pittsburgh and to get more money, and I'm a little surprised that he was able to pull it all off, and it shows how desperate the Steelers were to get rid of him, that they took virtually nothing in return. I mean, a third or fifth round pick is fine, but they traded a third round pick for Antonio Brown.
Shockingly low.
That's 25 cents on the dollar for a guy of this ability.
It is. And Brown gets the money that he wants. I mean, he was probably one of the best values in the league for much of his career, and now he has made sure to earn to maximize his earnings because he also got paid about $18, $19 million a year over the last 2 years.
I don't know if I'd say this if he had gone to, say, Tennessee or something, but it was a move that the minute it became Oakland's new player that it immediately shifted for me where we are with a couple of NFL franchises, those that didn't go get Antonio Brown, but the Raiders who, I mean, were essentially in many ways last year the most disappointing team in the league for all the hype and hoopla all last offseason about Gruden and the way that they tore the roster down. And now that the way they're building up, the Raiders are interesting again, I guess. I could find myself being tired of them quickly. But if they go out and they make a play for Le'Veon Bell or whoever else it is, this was the aggressive signpost of how they're going to try to team build with Gruden veterans and big pricey pieces.
I don't see anything resembling a plan there unless it's, okay, last year we were too far away to worry about building a team. Now we're close to moving to Vegas, so we want some names and headlines on our team.
I don't think there is an overarching plan. It's just reacting to whatever happens in the moment. And we can talk about Trent Brown in a minute, but the fact that they draft two tackles with their first three picks of the John Gruden era, and then they pay a huge amount of money to Trent Brown, tells me they're just kind of reacting. Now, when you look at the Amari Cooper and Antonio Brown deal separately, and even Khalil Mack, they're all very different. I mean, this Antonio Brown is short-term money. I would personally rather have Antonio Brown buy a decent amount compared to Amari Cooper over the next couple of years, and I would not necessarily be comfortable giving a huge long-term contract to Amari Cooper, and you got a first-round pick in the deal. So if you're just looking at what they did in terms of the wide receiver position, I love it.
Because I agree that maybe the plan isn't crystal clear, but the other thing could have happened. They could have been fleeced in this trade, and they absolutely got him for less than most people would have predicted.
But salary cap space and cash is as valuable as draft picks. So they didn't give up the draft picks, but they're giving up a ton of cash. And Antonio Brown did not get everything he wanted. He wanted to play for a Super Bowl contender, and he's joining the worst team in the AFC along with the Jets over last year.
You just get the sense that that was not – that was lower on his priorities.
But it's not everything he wanted.
Right.
Like, he did want to play for a contender, and now he's playing for a team that's not really relevant.
I see a little bit more vision to – the Gruden move, in the sense that I think he got there and his number first objective was to tear it all down, strip it down for parts, because, and a lot of these guys, Parcells was another guy, if you're at a certain level, the ego, whatever, or the past success, you wanted to make it your team. This, I am going to build this thing from the ground up,
right.
and anything I inherit doesn't mean you stay. Even a guy as great as Khalil Mack, I mean, that's what Gruden
but
wanted
to do. But does
that
make sense?
I mean,
like, just because you didn't draft Khalil Mack doesn't mean that he's not one of the two best players on defense in the league.
I'm not saying that was the right move, but I'm saying he's entitled to that. And when he gets the 10-year deal, that's the organization making the commitment to you. Do what you want to make us a contender. And I think, you know, and yes, we'll bring up that Trent Brown just got one of the biggest contracts ever to play left tackle for the Raiders, leaving the Patriots after one good season. I don't think that's a good signing, but it's a sign that he is looking now to build this team in his vision, and we'll see how it works out. I'm interested to see how it plays.
Well, I wonder if Gruden, too, because, I go back to the combine, he just seemed like a different John Gruden to me. And I wonder if last year took a bigger toll, where if it was going to be a 2 or 3 year teardown, the PR hit was far greater than it would have been 20 years ago, when there's just less media coverage of the NFL in general. And maybe whatever the plan was shifted midstream.
Well, and it had been a while since he had lost games as a coach, and he hadn't been through a season like that ever. Is that safe to say? And going through a miserable season like that is going to change how you think. And the key thing to me is Antonio Brown is awesome. Matt Harmon
was.
I think he's still.
The Raiders are paying big money for his decline phase.
It's really a 2 year contract. The third year they'll decide when they get there. And he's paying. They're paying a lot. They're paying what the Chiefs. They're paying a free. They're paying as if he was a free agent, which is seems kind of unnecessary. But it's ultimately a $3-4 million raise than what he was getting. But they're paying him what Sammy Watkins got last year. I mean, let's not get carried away. It's just sort of like a mid, you know, it's a free agent wide receiver pay. If you look at Matt Harmon's reception perception, our old friend, he had Antonio Brown getting open on a higher percentage of snaps than basically any receiver in the league still last year. And that over the last 4 years, his numbers are actually better than any wide receiver. And I think when you watched Brown last year and the attention that he got, to me, he just looked like peak Antonio Brown. So I think you're getting you better get another year.
He lost 23 yards per game on his 2017.
I hear you, but he scored a lot of touchdowns. He looked great, and he's getting a lot of attention. He still looked like a really, really great player.
Two last quick points for me. One, what better way to know for sure whether or not Derek Carr is your guy than bringing in arguably the best receiver in the league? And I think that's what we'll see. Could be surprised. Maybe Kyler Murray ends up being their quarterback in week 1 or somebody else. But I think maybe Gruden now sees if put him with a true number one, what happens. Also, your winners and losers. One that I did not see in the winner category, which I think should have been there. The rest of the AFC North, including Mark's Cleveland Browns, because I'm not saying the Steelers are done.
You know,
okay, I get it. I've been there. I'm not saying the Steelers are done, but now we officially know for sure that kind of era, that book is closed with the Killer Bees, and I don't think the Steelers will be a favorite in that division at this point. Perhaps they win 12 games next year, but I think it's a great news, great day for the rest of the AFC North.
My one question, because we heard up until the end that the Eagles, the Titans, and Jets were put into this mix at one point. We're all in on Antonio Brown and making some sort of a push for him. Were they all outbid by this hyper-low offer, or did they jump out because for
Nobody else wanted to pay him what the Raiders were going to pay.
I think that's it. I think...
But Wes, I'm not... I don't like... the one thing is, this is still a great player to me. You're saying they're going to get...
No,
his numbers will be down.
I'm saying I find the Raiders to be a directionless team, organization, and you look at a team like the Patriots who are, you know, as Evan Silva always says, running laps around the rest of the league.
Right.
They watch the Giants go out and make Nate Solder the highest-paid left tackle in the league, get a third-round pick compensation-wise for that, trade a third for Trent Brown and a fifth-round pick, move him from right tackle to left tackle to fill that hole. Now they're going to collect a third-round pick. The Raiders make him the highest-paid offensive tackle in the league annually. they drafted Colton Miller to play left tackle. Now they're putting him at right tackle.
Right.
To take the guy who was a career right tackle only to be used as a left tackle. Like, where's the direction?
That
the move is to get these guys before their big money. What the Patriots do, what the Raiders do, is throw way more money than anybody else in the league would at two different players.
Bad teams get stuck doing that, I hear you, but I just am not ready to call this like Antonio Brown's decline phase yet, although I think his numbers will be vastly down potentially.
Everything but basically Jerry Rice in history says that this is his decline
phase. I do think we should say that the Steelers, however they handled it, they lost. It failed. I mean, Kevin Colbert, this whole thing of trying to set a deadline, and there's all these teams interested. I don't know what the option was, because
hammer the Steelers for dealing with a crazy person?
It's just an ugly precedent, because three players could do this next offseason.
Yeah, it's unique, the Antonio Brown situation, because there's not many Antonio Browns. But you're right, Antonio Brown put them in such a tough spot. And I think you're right, Wes. We may never really get the answer, but I think the Raiders, who apparently offered that third and fifth early in the process, and they just sat on it, and they were willing to pay Antonio Brown, but they weren't willing to give up much draft capital. And I think there were other teams like the Bills, maybe the Titans, who knows, that were willing to give up more draft picks, but weren't into the money. And when I watched Drew Rosenhaus's interview on NFL Network with Andrew Siciliano, you definitely got the sense that like the Raiders were fine changing the money. And I think ultimately it's like Antonio Brown made that happen. And the Steelers are losers. And it is Colbert's fault on some level, because they are eating $21 million in dead cap money, largely because
he should have foreseen his wide receiver quitting on his team ahead of time. How is that Colbert's fault?
Because he didn't manage the cap well throughout the last 3-4 years. And every year they have to keep doing these things where they move their base salary into a guaranteed bonus for Roethlisberger, for a lot of the offensive linemen, and they did that for Antonio Brown last year.
You can blame Kevin Colbert for not foreseeing Antonio Brown doing this, but I can't blame him for that.
I'm saying most teams are not in such cap problem that they had to guarantee Antonio Brown all this money last year. That's a big reason why, is because they had to change all of his money around. You're right, they didn't see it coming.
But just
they
as of banged. Right now, like the other option would be to hold him hostage, even if he's not going to play, and not trade him at all, and just keep him.
That was
stuck.
Always
your career.
That was found out to be phony. He kept saying we'll keep him if we can, and they obviously weren't going to keep him no matter what.
Wes, before we move on, you know what would have helped?
What?
Kevin Colbert.
What would have helped him?
The GM app.
Yeah.
Hey, we have a team interested, willing to give up a third and a fifth and give a $30 million guaranteed contract at me.
Oh, I think they essentially had that already.
The GM app removes any question whether or not everyone is plugged in.
That's fair.
Moving on. Los Angeles Rams. More breaking news.
Breaking news from Adam Schefter. Patriots DN Trey Flowers intends to sign with the Detroit Lions in a 5-year deal.
Wow. Kent just jumping right in there.
Look at Kent Brown.
All right.
Now, Kent, typically you will slack me.
I did, but you didn't respond. Okay. It's breaking. Hey. You got to jump on it.
Hey, Kent.
I mean, technically, this show doesn't go up till hours later, but yeah.
All right. Kent, thank you very much for that.
I love it.
Trey Flowers does leave the New England Patriots.
Glad we didn't tape the show any early.
To go to the Lions, do we have any contract details there, Kent, at this point?
It's a 5-year deal. Should be, but according to Rap Sheet, more than 16 or 17.
Okay, so the Lions, who really do need to make a splash, make a big one in grabbing Greg, the best all-around player on the Patriots defense.
Yeah, once they didn't think it was worth franchise tagging Trey Flowers, I assumed that he was going to get a deal elsewhere, whether it was in the AFC East or now it makes sense, Patriots Midwest in terms of Detroit. The Lions have already signed Danny Amendola. They've already signed
Danny not going to the playoffs, Amendola?
Justin Coleman.
They've also signed Justin Coleman, who's really a Seahawks product because the Patriots basically gave him away to the Seahawks, but Matt Patricia knows him well. After his 2 years of quiet play in New England, and then he really played well in Seattle. But this is the biggest move, and I think it's a good signing. I know, Wes, maybe you don't think he's worth that sort of money, but to me, he's like a top – I would have to put the list in front of me, but to me, he's a top 10 to 12 you know, defensive linemen or top 15 defensive linemen. And I don't put – he's not exactly interior. He's not exactly an edge rusher. But he's perfect for this type of defense that wants to be able to change what they do week to week. Okay, you want a two-man front 1 week. You want a three. You want a four. You want a five. Trey Flowers can do it all. He can set the edge. He's smart. And he really does disrupt – plays, and he's in the middle of his prime, and that's just how much people cost in free agency. If Olivier Vernon was worth 17 a year 3 years ago, I think he's a better player than Olivier Vernon.
Which is why you see a lot of bad teams making moves right now, because that's when players get extremely overpaid. And how many times have we seen a coach go to a new spot, then way overpay to bring in his guys, get rid of the last guy's guys, and then he's fired within 3 years, and, you know, Trey Flowers
rinse and repeat.
Trey Flowers is released right when Matt Patricia gets fired from the Lions. I mean, to me, it's a lot like Malik Jackson. I know we compared him to Michael Bennett.
Yeah.
But it reminds me a lot of Malik Jackson going to the Jaguars, and he had Calais Campbell, Yannick Ngakoue, and Marcel Darius there to help him out. Who's helping Trey Flowers? You got Snacks there? Deshaun Hand?
I mean, it's
but
reminder.
I think the Jackson signing was something the Jaguars would do over again. And Flowers, to
by the way,
credit,
he just got released.
Plays about 300, 400 more snaps than Malik Jackson.
Yeah, it's just
he's going to be on the field.
I went back and listened to a portion of our – I guess you would call it the opening free agency bonanza, you know, sum up scenario from a couple years ago. And like
sorry about
80%
that.
Of the people that we talked so about are either on their way out or on their are already gone from the team. So there is a lingering buzzkill to all this manufactured excitement over all these signings.
I totally agree. And yet I think Flowers is really safe. I just don't like the worst case scenario to me with him is he solid and he gives you $10 to $12 million in value. And yes, you're better off if you're the Patriots and you're drafting guys like that. And they certainly had a price for him and it wasn't this high. And that's unfortunate because I loved watching him play. But like, he's not going to turn into a bum. He's a good player.
And the flip side to the coach going to from A to B and bringing in his guys is Matt Patricia. I like the idea of Matt Patricia knowing exactly who Trey Flowers is, using the right scheme and putting something, a known quality, into Detroit's defense, then Trey Flowers going to a group of coaches that have never worked with him and have no idea if he'll work out.
Bob Quinn's been there since 2016. So even though it's only Patricia's –
how's his team looking?
Right.
Even though it's not good.
Even though it's Patricia's second year, Quinn is under some pressure to make some magic. I mean, they paid a Ziggy Ansah $17 million last
year. I mean, I'd settle for even vaguely exciting instead of magic.
Let's move on. So much to get to. The Rams, Eric Weddle, they're in business. The Rams agreed to terms on a 2-year deal with Weddle that is worth up to $12.5 million. Weddle had, according to Weddle, 11 offers, narrowed that list down to 5, chose the Rams. So Weddle, the 34-year-old veteran safety who was cut by the Ravens last week, lands with the Rams team with that Super Bowl window wide open. Also staying with the Rams, Dante Fowler, who came over in that midseason trade from the Jaguars, made an impact, especially down the stretch. Well, he sticks around. He is off the open market. And at 1 year and $14 million, Rap Sheet reports, feels like a pretty good deal for the Rams, who don't have to make a big commitment, really, to either player, and have two pieces in place.
Weddle got what I've never seen before, the palindrome contract. Every figure in the contract reads the same forwards and backwards.
Ooh.
Signing bonus, the actual money.
Bizarre.
I had never seen that before. I think the agent did it just to be fun.
It's cute. It was cute. Fowler especially surprised me because, especially edge rusher and all that, I feel like he could have gotten a better contract on the open market.
14
that surprised
million?
Me. For 1 year, though, I don't know. Maybe
That's a lot of bucks for 1 year.
I think usually I am skeptical when you give teams too much credit for attracting free agents in terms of like how they sold themselves or it's an attractive place to play or the coaching staff. But I would tend to give the Rams staff a little bit of credit that I think they convinced Dante Fowler based on his experience with them. Look how great that just worked out for you. For 8 or 9 weeks. We are going to pay you what you would have made, if not more, on an average salary. But we're going to make you look so great again for another year that you can go be a free agent and make even more money a year from now. Because I agree, Wes. I think he would have done better guarantees and a long-term deal. But the long-term potential is maybe even better if he gets paid a lot this year and then teams aren't worried that it was just a fluke. I don't think he was going to make Trey Flowers money as a free agent by any means this offseason.
I mean, I don't know if his agent would agree with that strategy necessarily. What happens if you tear your ACL in early December?
Well, but he agreed to the deal.
Well, the one thing I like is the Rams. These feel like more honest contracts to me. I can trust that Weddle will be there for two seasons, and we know Fowler will be there for one. Don't lace this up with these, you know, these phony four-year deals, blah, 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 and they're not there.
Right, the Landon Collins deal is already – there's no way he's getting to the end of that six-year deal.
You see a lot of prove-it contracts that are for 1 year, $5 million. You don't see 1 year, $14 million prove-it.
Exactly,
contracts.
That's what I mean.
Wait, what was the Ndamukong Suh contract?
Almost identical. So they took basically that Suh money and gave it to Fowler.
But Suh wasn't proving everything. He was already – he's a three-time, four-time pro, all-pro. He's not – he wasn't trying to prove anything.
You're right. I think it really is a case of betting on himself if you're Fowler. I think it's a belief that he must believe that he's going to do even better this season.
Ed Rusher and Wade Phillips' defense is a good place to
right,
be in Los Angeles.
Right. He had as good a contract push, I think, after a pretty star-crossed career as any player in recent memory.
We should not discount how inviting and alluring it is to be playing for the Rams right now.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think he probably had an unbelievable time playing for them.
He loves it here. The media's here. The clubs are here. I was going to say the fans.
They had a lobotomy to remove the Super Bowl experience from his memory.
I mean, and he played great, though.
It's a legit Super Bowl contender, so maybe he is.
Wade's chill. I mean, Wade's not going to be like having you running gassers and yelling at you. It's going to be club Wade.
Here's another big contract. Quan Alexander, who missed most of last season after suffering a torn ACL with the Buccaneers, the former fourth-round pick. He had become an important player on that defense. Well, forget about the ACL, you know? Forget about everything because the 49ers say, we want this man and we're going to pay him big money. He signed, according to Rap Sheet, a four-year $54 million deal with $27 million. That's, again, the important number. In guarantees, a big payday. Wes, for the 24-year-old, $13.5 million average tops. Luke Kuechly. Is this crazy money?
This is crazy money, and it's all because the 49ers drafted the wrong guy in Reuben Foster. Mm. Their linebacker core is depleted. They need it desperately to pay for linebackers. They get a guy who's a bit like Alec Ogletree, physical, athletic, makes big plays, but also misses a lot of tackles, is not always where he needs to be. And I would question, outside of picking up the phone when Bill Belichick wanted to unload Jimmy Garoppolo on Kyle Shanahan, what has John Lynch done well in San Francisco?
I agree with you.
Including the Malcolm Smith signing 2 years ago, which is another linebacker.
Jerick McKinnon.
He's going to stay. Jerick McKinnon was bad luck, but it was a curious signing. Malcolm Smith is going to stay on a pay cut. Quan Alexander's coming off a torn ACL. I've been thinking for a few years that There's a market there for value in terms of guys coming off torn ACLs or big injuries that they almost seem to get undervalued sometimes as free agents. But maybe that's out the window because, I mean, he's supposedly 3, 4, 5 months from football activities. He might not be – hopefully he's ready for the start of the season. But he was an up-and-down player who made a lot of big plays, but I think Bucs fans would tell you he was so aggressive he gave up a lot of big plays.
You almost have to look at that front office and say they've gotten lucky in one sense where the late season trade 2 seasons ago for Jimmy G brought so much optimism that you covered all the sins that in the rest of the team building. And then the early season injury to Jimmy G last year gave everyone this mulligan, like, well, of course we aren't seeing the real Niners without Jerry McKinnick. Now this time around, you can't go 6-10 without some heads rolling.
This is one, though, we're taping it pretty soon after it was first reported. I would be curious to see the guaranteed money. The insiders are getting smart. Dan, we've been getting on them for saying guaranteed money. This show, guaranteed money is not really guaranteed. Now he apparently has $27 million in rolling guarantees. I don't know, what's a rolling guarantee, whatever that means. So maybe it's like a one-year contract for all we really know at this point.
Let's move on. Trade tsunami. It's coming. You ready?
It's been here. Coming.
Here it is.
Trade tsunami.
Talked about the Raiders earlier. They also made a deal this weekend, sending Kelechi Osemele The left guard, a two-time Pro Bowler who suffered a down season in 2018. So Gruden ships him out of town along with a sixth-round pick to the Jets, who get offensive line help, which they need. It's a 29-year-old player who, if he stays healthy, if he's in good shape and all that, represents a huge upgrade for the Jets in the middle of their line. And like I talked about this last week, as important as bringing in somebody like Le'Veon Bell is, fixing that line in front of Darnold is equally important. And I think this is a good step in that direction. Your thoughts, gentlemen?
It seems to me that the Raiders, there are reports from ESPN specifically that they are cash poor after paying for Antonio Brown and Trent Brown. So,
and Trent Brown like deferred most of his big money into the second year after they get to Vegas. In theory, because there's no income tax there, but maybe it's, you know.
So they're helping the Jets build their offensive line because they can't afford Kelechi Osemele. I'm sure they also think that Osemele is a bit in decline from where they signed him 3 years ago.
Yeah, he was one of those guys that, Mark, if you listened to the show 3 years ago, we would have been talking up off the top. He was a top five free agent.
We love their whole line.
And he was on the potential cuts list because Mayock, especially, and then after at the combine, Mayock kind of said Osemele he thought was up and down a year ago, which, you know, was maybe telegraphing it. But for the Jets, it seems like a very, I mean, at worst, he's a competent starting guard, which is like
better than James Carpenter.
It's impossible to get. I think these veteran pick swap deals are like, you know, they're the new money ball.
And Matt Paradis is the big center on the market. There's a report out there that it's between the Jets and the Bills in terms of the fight to get Paradis. So that would be a nice upgrade to the middle of that line. So we'll see how it all plays out. Another trade, the Patriots in business. They acquire Michael Bennett and a 2020 seventh round pick from the Eagles in exchange for a 2020 fifth round pick. Bennett, we had heard he was his salary was a little bit restricting for the Eagles. They were going to potentially release him. Instead, they move him in a deal. Bennett, Mark, still, even at age 33, makes an impact on a defense that made the Patriots a little bit better, it sounds like.
I mean, I guess to Wes's point, you look at this, Michael Bennett, a guy who systematically knows he's going to play into deep January every year he's in the NFL. He's proven he can do it. And you're not one of these teams blowing the bank for someone coming off a big season. He fits with the Patriots, and I'm sort of over-doubting anything they do at this point until they prove that they can't operate a football team better than anyone else in the league. Michael Bennett, you already had the other Bennett brother there. Why not just go full house?
Well, Martellus wants to come back now. Martellus says he wants to play again. I have a feeling the Patriots,
well, I don't know if we need that,
aren't going to go along with that. I think they'd feel one Bennett is enough. I think people have been waiting for Michael Bennett to fall off, and it hasn't really happened. I mean, he's still a very solid starter, if not better, at a cheap price. But the Eagles, to the credit, I think they think a little more like some baseball teams do. They looked at Malik Jackson out there and thought, well, we'd rather have Malik Jackson for a few extra million dollars more than Michael Bennett, and we'll just move on from Michael Bennett.
Expected to sign a 3-year, $30 million deal, according to Rap Sheet, Malik Jackson.
How about Wes pointing out that Trey Flowers was kind of the Michael Bennett of the Patriots defense last week, and I think the Patriots were listening.
I don't know.
And they were just like, let's get the original for way cheaper.
There have been post-release whispers in Seattle and Philadelphia that Michael Bennett cares about rushing the passer to the extent that he no longer plays great run defense. Now, I don't think PFF's grades reflect that, but both of those teams apparently thought that. The Patriots do need an edge rusher, and he does play sort of the same position as Trey Flowers, where he can go inside or out. And we saw down the stretch last year, he can definitely still get to the quarterback.
And he never stops playing. He plays a lot of snaps, and they're going to need some talent on the defensive line. It is not a good defensive line without Trey Flowers there. It also might be a guy, you know, he's been in the NFL a long time. I mean, you don't want to cast aspersions. You know, he might just be like, after a year of Michael Bennett, you've just been like, okay, that was good, but maybe that's...
Get a ring and get out.
Let's move on.
Greg, does this up your Patriots fandom again? You've recently noted that you're not really a Patriots fan anymore, and you're just waiting for Belichick.
I mean, that's been blown out of proportion.
No, it's not.
Proportion.
It's actually not been focused on enough, but...
I raised the possibility.
Oh, yeah, like, Dan, you would have loved it.
That, oh, yeah.
We talked about that if, when Belichick retires, am I really going to be as
invested
in it?
No, he's out. Belichick's out, Greg's out.
I have not decided. I'm just saying, like, that's...
You're changing your tune.
It's not going to feel I know. I'm talking through it on the podcast.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, I am. Is it possible that I'm not going to be as emotionally invested? I mean, are the Dolphins as emotionally invested after Don Shula left? Yeah, probably not. It's like, come on, you gotta watch.
I mean, a few assumptions being thrown around.
You know, you got to watch Cam Cameron running the show and be like, oh, yep, I'm just as into it.
Ask Henry how he feels. He seems like a pretty diehard Dolphins fan all through the bad years.
I have thoughts on that, by the way.
Oh.
Do you want my theory on it?
I mean, sure.
It's not cutting or anything, but it's my opinion that you've enjoyed this amazing run with the Patriots, the team that you grew up following, and you've had this Brady-Belichick ride. But also now, listen, you're getting a little bit older. You're making waves in NFL media. Maybe you don't want to be attached to a team as a fan anymore. So this gives you, in your mind, this could be my clean out. So no longer will I be a fan of a team. I could be Greg Rosenthal, NFL insider.
I don't want to be an insider. I'm a fan of a lot of teams, and I think the Patriots, no matter what, will always be 1A. And you guys seem to be confused when I'm like rooting for other teams. By the way,
that was a Springsteenian
I don't think we're
beat writer trope right there.
What?
By the way.
But it's true, though. Do you think it's phony?
I just think it's interesting that the minute the Patriots like lose their Hall of Fame coach, you're out. Like,
you're
it seems
not
naturally
a fan of things.
I've kind of given up on other sport. You're right. There is a point in getting older that I don't like giving up like my emotional well-being or stability to anything. Like,
that's why I mean, it, but you also haven't had to
outside of myself. Part. What do you mean?
I mean, try being a Jets fan for 20 years. You've essentially just like this magic carpet's floating around from season to season. Every autumn, you're sort of 1,000 feet above everyone else, trying to convince us I may still be a Patriots fan. Please.
That's why gambling was invented, because as you grow older, adults have very little reason for a stake in games that 18 and 25
right.
There's
a little
play.
There's a little bit of cognitive dissonance. It's happened to all my other sports. I mean, I've kind of given up being a real.
I mean, I'm with you there.
Red Sox and Celtics fan too. Like I hope
put
they
a
win,
gun to my head to watch college basketball.
Not emotionally invested in the UConn Huskies anymore.
The Springsteenian trope, a sports writer trope that you might be drifting toward.
Yeah.
In your 40s is. I don't root for teams. I root for good stories.
I don't root for good stories. But they all, like, hate football. And, like, I love football more than I ever have. But part of – I love it a little less when, like, the team you're rooting for is making you miserable.
I think we've spent enough time on this topic.
The Chiefs move on from Justin Houston. This is a good story.
I think it's a good one. I think you guys should think about it. Think how miserable you guys are on Sundays. Maybe you could get that love of the sport back.
So now, after you're saying I should now jump out when things finally
also, don't
might
love
be
the end with the misery. I have
deal with
enough
your own apostasy
with the Jets. They don't ruin my life. And unless it's like a rare thing like when Ryan Fitzpatrick throws 3 interceptions in week 17 in Buffalo.
Right.
But usually I have enough distance where they don't destroy my life. I enjoy rooting for the Jets. Me and Keith, we like it. My brother Kevin, it's a family thing. It doesn't have to ruin your life or overpower your entire existence. That's all.
By the way, Greg, look into your
this
right pocket.
Years,
I put a little
in
present
advance.
Into your right pocket.
Oh, so that was you? I was like so confused. There was a random Slim Jim like in my zipped up
I like
pocket.
To call it a,
and I was like
you zipped it up. That's great.
Well, totally assumed it was me because I'm someone that's, you know, occasionally at the end of the day, I'll like empty my pockets. There'll be some strange things.
Little
in there.
Nosh.
There'll be some strange things that I have no recollection, taking.
The
it
Chiefs
was a gift.
cut ties with Justin Houston. Not a huge surprise. This happened on Sunday.
It's a natural. I mean, it's an old Wisconsin. It's a knockoff Slim Jim.
Yeah, that's not the real deal.
Please.
Not the real deal, Holyfield. Brett Veach, at the combine, did not deny reports that a trade could be possible for the veteran linebacker. Apparently, no suitors were found, so they decide to cut ties with Justin Houston. Wes, 30 years old. Still can get to the quarterback, but maybe not at the same level as a few years back. 9 sacks last year. I had 2 sacks in the postseason. A guy I feel like should have a market, right?
I think he's going to have a market, just not at $15 million. Can still get to the quarterback, like you said. And I think we've said on this podcast, last year the only 2 teammates to be in the top 10 in pressure percentage were Justin Houston and Dee Ford. He can still get it done. I could see a smart team going out and signing him. I think if he played anywhere but Kansas City, he'd be seen as one of the best pass rushers of the last half decade.
5 years removed from a 22-sack season, which a lot of people forget.
He had 9.5 in 2017 and 9 last year in 12 games. I mean, 9 in 12 games.
But a ton of pressure, like a ton of pressure, and watch and sets the edge, does it all really well. It's interesting that they're going to move on from their best two defensive linemen if they do trade D Ford. There's some talk that the Packers and the Niners were maybe interested in trading for D Ford, and man, I think that would be a,
I tried to send him there last week.
I mean, that would be a fun one.
Could have like Chris Jones as a one-man defensive line.
He made it into the top 10 of our top 101 free agents, which is continuing to be updated. I got the sense
that's a living, breathing document.
Wes was gone this weekend. He was in St. Louis at the baby shower. How was the baby shower?
It was a lot of fun.
Baby shower.
I am not a shower person. It's
a little strange.
Wedding shower.
What are you doing there? Baby shower, the men.
Oh, wait, it's not a baby shower.
I explained this on our last podcast. My family is also throwing a wedding shower in Cincinnati next month, and I'm not even allowed to go to that one because I'm a guy.
I'm making up an event.
It's like a party for the wedding. Yeah, with the
I'm making up a work event, Wes, in that situation. Not, you're a good man, so you went. But I'm making up – actually, we have this big podcast meeting that I can't miss, so I have to. I can't be at the wedding shower.
Could not
St. Louis. No. I can't make
it. It's a new owners meeting to discuss the 2022 collective bargaining.
You could say anything, and that's perfect. And she'd be like, "Oh, damn it! All right, well, I'll let you know how it is. I'll send photos." And you're like, "Please do."
It ended up being a good time. Like, it's definitely not my scene, but her friends are very cool. So I
only brought that up, by the way, to say I get the sense you think Justin Houston, I overrated him a little bit, putting him on this top 10.
I am a big Justin Houston fan.
Oh, okay, good.
Good, good, good.
Number 9.
Same page, scientist. Good. Denzel Perryman staying in L.A. The Chargers agreed to terms with a linebacker on a 2-year, $12 million extension. Rap Sheet reported on Friday. Second-round pick in the 2015 draft. Nice move by your Bolts, Greg.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, Wes always points out, and he's right, how they're just they're a bad run defense in general, and they're much better when Denzel Perryman is in the lineup. They also got rid of Jahleel Adai. The Chargers are not that far away. They're a 13-win team that does not get a lot of respect. I feel like I want to see them make some moves to get excited about this.
He's got to stay healthier, though.
Yeah,
missed a ton of games.
He's an old school. He's a throwback player, like a thumper of a linebacker, which sort of reminds me of Brandon Spikes when he played for the Patriots. Your only goal is to stop the run.
And I might as well just tee you up on this one as well, Greg, because I know where it's going. Sean Lee will stay with the Cowboys. He gets a haircut, so he will make haircut.
Wait, where is it going?
A reduction in salary.
I think this is a West bit. If
No. Well,
he's a Garrett guy. I mean, you can't.
They can't quit their guys.
Can't get rid of Garrett guy. I mean, I think.
Go ahead. Claybon
put it well, in on Twitter, something to the effect, Jason Witten, Sean Lee making $8 million or whatever it is combined this year, but hundreds of million dollars in leadership value. I mean, just these guys, they couldn't.
Billions.
The biggest problem with this move is that the Cowboys typically play two linebackers on most of their downs. And Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch are just simply way better than Sean Lee right now.
Don't
Isn't
you have
that
to
depth, though?
Like,
football?
Not if the depth doesn't play special teams.
It's expensive depth. Because it's a sentimental.
But there can't be any Jerry Jones like, about. Oh, we're going to make sure Sean Lee has got a big part of this team. It's just enough with that.
Oh, I think
drama.
They're going to say stuff.
That's like annoying that. To me.
Get Sean Lee and Witten back.
I mean,
get Romo
the team
on the team.
Team
get Romo
great,
back.
I mean.
Get Jay Novacek back in the building.
Turn the page, Cowboys.
Dez was on to something.
Get Dez back.
Garrett, guys?
Danny Playoff Amendola, we mentioned that, didn't we? He signed.
I appreciate it, by the way, Dak Prescott braving the cold in Southern California in the desert to watch Serena Williams Friday night. What a match. Maybe the match of the year, Serena versus Victoria Azarenka. He was out there.
Were you there?
I wasn't, but I was watching on TV. And at first, he was trying to look all tough, like wearing a T-shirt. And I was like, "Oh man, it's gotta be cold there." And he had like a little blanket over his thing. Later on, he's got a hoodie and a blanket over his whole thing. Don't try to be too manly.
Okay. He had like an FDR blanket.
He put a blanket like over his head later. Yes.
Wow, I don't want my quarterback wearing an FDR blanket. I feel like it shows weakness.
That's what he was trying to be cool.
I mean, I
try to keep it real here.
I think
I see
that
where
was
you're going with
it. Fair point.
What a match, though.
I want Sam Darnold sitting there in a pair of shorts, cut thigh high, and a nice sleeveless T-shirt. And just take in the old tennis.
People want to pretend it's not cold in Southern California. It's 53 degrees and windy. That's cold.
Well.
I mean, come on.
It's all relative.
How soft do you want to be?
Sam Darnold in like a nice USC-flavored romper with some little mittens.
Now you're speaking my language.
Move back to Massachusetts or New York for a winter and see if you think 53 and windy is cold.
That's fair. That's fair, dog. Yeah, Danny Amendola reunites with Patricia as well. So, Patriots Midwest.
I would much rather have Sean Lee for $3.5 million than Danny Amendola for $4.5 million at this stage in his career. I'm a little.
Why do non-playoff teams keep signing Danny Amendola, who's usually injured and ineffective during the regular season, and only turns into a great player in the playoffs?
Seems logical, unless you want to spin him to a playoff team near the deadline. Nobody wins here.
I think it does point out like how difficult it is going to be. I don't know. I don't know why I say this. The Patriots win no matter what. But like as more and more of their guys go to other places, like the Dolphins and Lions seem like they're going to compete for every Patriots free agent out there.
I mean, you don't want to pay for depth. He's 34. Like spending a lot of money for backups. He's literally never had a season over 660 yards in his entire career. He's under 10 yards per catch.
I think there is a thing where we know this guy is from. Like the whole idea of calling anything, anywhere, Patriots Midwest or Patriots West or South, you better be mimicking even a breadcrumb of the success of the team we're calling you located somewhere else in the United States.
Is Michigan the Midwest?
Yes.
I feel like we're a little...
We've had this conversation, I think, on
the Patriots North. They're North.
Overly... Cute with what Midwest is?
No,
well, Ohio is right under Michigan, and growing up in Ohio, we were only ever referred to
it as the Midwest. I know.
Wait,
Camp
Brown just got my ear and said Pittsburgh's the Midwest too.
Is
everything the Midwest?
I consider Pittsburgh way more Midwest than East Coast.
There's a lot of conversation, especially like is Pittsburgh certainly west?
Basically, Youngstown East.
Yeah, it just seems like it's becoming a catch-all.
Well, no, so it. There's a map
big
here.
Country.
Flyover country.
It extends far west of Michigan and far and east of Michigan. The Midwest sort of begins with Ohio and Michigan.
I mean, I know Pittsburgh's on the west side of the state.
Right.
But the east side of the state is damn near at the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah, but here's
the
long state.
Pittsburgh is not included in this map, by the way.
It's way more similar to Detroit, Cincinnati,
but
Cleveland,
I get it.
Than it is Boston.
It feels
or
Midwest. My friends came back from college in Pittsburgh.
I'm talking
and
geography.
They like NASCAR suddenly. So that's, you know.
Yeah, but
I never got into that.
Just because we draw lines to make states doesn't mean that everybody in those lines acts like the rest of the state.
Yes, it does.
All right, now Mark has a map up here, and this is okay.
Name these states, this is not good audio. Program,
not at all. So Pennsylvania, according to this map, is not the Midwest, thank God. But Ohio is. Okay, that's fine.
Well, I think Pittsburgh shares much more DNA with Ohio than it does
Michigan.
Philadelphia.
Yes, for sure.
Glad we figured that out. Finally.
Wes is pro cut Pennsylvania down the middle.
I think that we pay too much attention to borders.
Ouch. Big statement there. The Lions agreed to terms. Did we mention this? Justin Coleman.
We did.
Good.
Highest paid nickelback in the NFL. This is the year that nickel players start getting paid. Slot receivers and slot corners are getting paid like wide receiver twos and cornerback twos.
Is this the year that Nickelback the band gets the respect that they've craved?
Finally.
Their entire careers.
I'm going to go with no.
Kent Brown, the greatest rock artist of all time, is?
Rock artist? Mick Jagger.
Okay. That's a safe answer. I mean, the Rolling Stones as the band. But, yes, okay, I'll give you Jagger, unless you're referring to his solo stuff.
Well, I'm just saying you said artist, so I didn't want to say band, so I just went with the best singer.
I mean, I would maybe go with someone that, like, played music as at least as part of his arsenal.
Mick Jagger from Kent, England.
There we go.
Chuck Berry.
Don't you dare say Kent Brown is not bringing the heat to the Around the NFL podcast. Did we say Jason Peters is back to the Eagles on a one-year deal?
We did not.
Did not, so.
That's big.
Future Hall of Famer hanging around.
Eagles. That's big.
Useful.
They figured it out.
Not Jason Peters anymore, but he can still play.
I think there was some doubt about that one, and they figured it out.
He's way better than Vitae.
Right. I mean, it's funny to think about because, like, how much better is he than Trent Brown right now? He's so much better than Trent Brown, and he's so much less expensive.
Greg, honestly, you're going to be surprised by this, but I will support you if you attempt to distance yourself from the throne of sleaze.
It's just more of an intellectual.
But you just
got to
promise me that I'll never, let's say 20 years down the line, maybe we're all in different parts of the country, maybe we're all together, who knows, that I'm not listening to an interview or a podcast with you as the guest, and you and someone asks you, well, what do you root for? Who do you root for, Greg? I know you're from New England. I root for good stories. Just promise me you'll never say
that's
that.
That's fine. Well, you would never listen to that podcast.
That's fair, but
I won't say that. And this whole time I've said they'd be 1A. It'd just be a little like different. It's just gonna be different. Mm-hmm. That's it. They're 1A. It's like I was there at the old World Series last year, rooting on the Red Sox. Am I living and dying emotionally like I used to? No, because you're not putting in the sweat equity of watching them every time.
Sweat
but that doesn't
equity.
Mean you're rooting against them. You got your family. You got
This is dressed up in a lot of nice words. I just something about it feels wrong to me. But I'll also do the work to try to figure out what on earth you're doing.
I am worried. You know, you never want to, like, if you have something that you do, you don't want to just do it, but worse. At any point. And the Patriots, whatever they're, you know, being a fan of them, it's going to be, you're going to do it, but worse.
Retroactively, it would, well, I don't, listen, yeah, we don't have time. Retroactively, it might affect, not that it matters to you, just like you were saying, I wouldn't listen to your podcast. It doesn't matter to you. What do I think of you as a fan? But I would think somebody that quit on the team as soon as they weren't good anymore, it's like a Bulls fan getting out on Chicago after Jordan retired. I would think, oh, you were never a real fan to start with.
Well, I think that's fair. In Greg's defense, so I've considered myself a San Antonio Spurs fan from the moment they drafted Tim Duncan.
Right.
And as much as I want the love to be there still, now that Duncan and Kawhi Leonard are gone, it's just like, okay, what am I really rooting
for? Well, add you to the list.
Of course I'll be rooting for him, and especially if we're still doing this podcast when Belichick leaves. You know, I'll be,
he will outlive this podcast.
I'll be rooting for him. But in your heart, is it going to mean as much to you? No, I'm just being honest. Probably not.
Am I still a Knicks fan if I haven't watched a Knicks game in 10 years?
I don't think anybody's still a Knicks fan.
It's also more like, what do you want out of being a sports fan? It's like, everything you want, if you've gotten the best that there could ever be, it's like,
again, you're
and asking for anything more is greedy.
This is a nice PR job, but I think more where some of us are getting to is from another angle, is as soon as it becomes a struggle, I'm out. You want the ease and the joy. I know that's not what you're saying because you're talking about it as an intellectual, curious exercise. And all this stuff. But on the surface level, from another angle, it's like, when this isn't like pleasurable to me, I'm not going to ride with this entity, whether it be a team or something else, through the tough times too. Better not bleed over into the way you do other things. That's all.
This is exactly what I was talking about the other day, when there's an inverse relationship between toughness and quality of life. You don't want to endure the bad times. And what that doesn't mean, that means you're not going to be tough.
I'm more open-minded on this, but they're making great points, you have to say. The Kissing Cousins.
Sure.
Sometimes you have to endure the bad times.
I think it's more just getting old and, like, wondering. You know, when you go down to those the Super Bowls have changed it a little bit for me, being there in person. Like, going down to the locker room, like, when they've won and lost or whatever, and it's just like, oh, here are all these guys. But it's like there's not really any difference between the Patriots guys and the Rams guys or the Eagles guys. And it's like they're all just these like millionaire athletes that wear this uniform for a short time in their life.
It's just laundry.
They don't really have as
much. Just laundry.
And then you're just like, okay, well,
root for stories.
It's a little different.
Wes, I know what you're talking about, the toughness, the battle. The Yankees had like 3 85-win seasons in a row.
Oh, man.
Earlier this decade. And
You stuck with them through that?
I stayed with them.
But were you as into them those seasons?
I was. That's why, and again, I'm not judging, but I love the Yankees as much, probably more now than I did 10 years ago, just because they were released from anything NFL related.
That's part of it, too, is we do this for our jobs.
Absolutely agree with that.
All right. Good talk. Big week coming up. So we're going to have a show, an NFL.com free agency. What's the name of the program? Free Agency Live?
Frenzy?
No, I think they dropped Frenzy.
No, we're not included with that. Frenzy, for the most part.
Free Agency Live is the hashtag.
Okay, so we're doing a show today, is that correct?
It'll already have aired by the time anyone listens to it. But it will be on NFL.com afterwards.
Too, yes, so we're doing two NFL.com video shows, and you could get the links from our Twitter pages or hopefully the Around the NFL Twitter handle. But this podcast, if you're all about purity, I just listen to the pod, and we don't judge you. You got a show Tuesday. Wednesday, when the official league year begins, the new league year begins, and then Thursday, we should have a show as well. So a lot of content coming your way in addition to our Wednesday Twitter show. We are productive. That's it. This is Dan Hansis signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, Kent Brown coming in with the breaking news. It's a first for everything, and we loved it. See you tomorrow, Kenny. Till Tuesday!